Is there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an infinite line between the reasonable and the highly unlikely? Join us on a journey into the improbable.
Today's story, episode 253, Ocean Drift, read by Mitchell Tu. Opening and closing theme by Matthew Erdman. Somewhere and sometime, nothing will change. I watched a band of cumulonimbus clouds mushroom up from the ocean on the distant horizon, suspended on small dark stems of precipitation. Despite the distance, I could smell the approaching rain. Out in front, a large automated tugboat belching out black diesel exhaust was struggling to pull our platform, the Ocean Drift, away from New Cascadia, a microstate that had been moored in the shallow waters of what used to be Bokak Atoll. Now, all but submerged under several meters of rising ocean, what little of the atoll remained above the waves had been bought by New Cascadia and now served as a place to anchor the independent startup nation to the ocean floor.
Hey, Hermes. Worried about the storm? We should be through it before it amounts to much.
I turned to find Jasper, my human advocate and friend, standing at the safety rail beside me. Checking to ensure no one else was around, I answered.
I can smell it,
I explained, lifting my nose to the wind. Jasper nodded appreciatively.
You orangutans have a better sense of smell than us Homo sapiens, she said, tilting her head back and inhaling deeply, then turning to eye the storm clouds again.
Maybe we should have taken the container ship instead. It would have been easier to move, and faster.
Maybe so, I said. But it's just a rusting steel hull. The platform's virtually finished, and we don't have the resources to retrofit a ship.
I pointed out, loping over to the opposite side of the platform where the New Cascadia seawall was now a small line on the horizon. Behind it, I could just make out the hodgepodge of structures which formed the luxurious living spaces of its citizenry. Anchored to one side was the ancient container ship where us migrant workers had been housed. New Cascadia was a place I was glad to finally be leaving behind. Jasper joined me.
We'll find another micronation, she tried to assure me.
One that doesn't have agreements with New Cascadia, I reminded her, and one that will trade work for citizenship. We don't have the money to buy our way in anywhere.
We have this.
Jasper swept her arms around to include the 10-story superstructure containing the habitat spaces.
The only thing that's not finished are the tennis courts and pool on the open platform, and they're both superfluous. Hey, I'm sure we could find a better use for that space. Maybe a forest. Wouldn't that be something?
I love Jasper's optimism. I suppose I owe my life to her. She rescued me from a mainland lab just before it was raided and closed down for breaking the international prohibition on human-animal gene splicing. Those outlawed practices created me, an uplifted orangutan modified by human genes to boost brain development. Jasper had been a junior researcher working with the experimental subjects to measure the extent of their enhanced capacities. When she discovered my exceptional cognitive abilities, she helped me hide them. I'm not sure what the ultimate purpose of the program was. Even Jasper doesn't know. But I'm sure I was not it. I'm too smart to be an unpaid laborer who understands orders but doesn't have the wherewithal to ask for wages. I'm not trying to be cynical, but given what I've learned about humanity, I am guessing that was the goal. With no place to flee to, where I wouldn't be confined to a lab for the rest of my life, and Jasper imprisoned, we were forced offshore to the self-declared micronation of New Cascadia.
A forest would be nice. I miss trees,
I admitted, anxiously checking again to ensure no one else was around to overhear us talking.
I'd love the chance to climb again.
That part of my genetic makeup hadn't been altered much. My arms and legs are equally dexterous, and that had been our ticket to the micronation. They needed laborers to build new platforms to expand their tiny nation, and I'm able to get places without the need of cranes and scaffolding. We were given work visas, and eventually told we could stay on if we came up with the cash to buy a space in the new concrete island we were there to build. In short, citizenship had a price.
Did we do the right thing?
I questioned.
There wasn't really any other choice, Hermes, Jasper pointed out. The job was almost over, and none of us had the money to buy in.
Everything had a price in New Cascadia. That was just how it worked. There were no taxes, no public services, and virtually no laws, as long as you didn't interfere with anyone else's right to do whatever they wanted to. And that's why we ended up there. That, plus the fact the micronation rejected all international law. It was why the other refugees we worked with ended up there as well. On the surface, New Cascadia looked as if it was a place that would accept us, but it turned out to be a dead end. So, in desperation, we were forced to act to ensure we had a future.
Think they'll try and catch us?
I asked, watching the last of the habitat towers sink below the horizon behind us.
It will take them a while to clear the channel, Jasper said, squinting at the ocean to make sure she was right. And who's going to do that? Everyone on a work visa came with us, and as long as we stay in international waters...
No one will care, I completed her sentence. Then again, no one else might be willing to let us in, I added.
Then we'll start our own micronation, Jasper suggested. This platform was designed to house and support 200. There are only 50 of us. We could sell the other 150 spaces to people in our situation and get the cash we need to start up once we find a suitable anchorage. It would be a place where you wouldn't have to hide what you are.
The first fat drops of rain began pelting down, and we headed into the habitat building at the center of the platform. As we came through the main entrance to the habitat atrium, we stumbled onto a small, animated group arguing about something. They stopped as soon as they noticed us.
Hey, it's Jasper and her pet ape,
the tallest one sneered. He went by the name Brody and liked to drop hints that he had been someone important in his past. But like everyone on a New Cascadia work permit, he was on the run from some authority and had nowhere else to go.
We're finally going to make a few decisions around here, he informed us. Like, where we should go, who should run the place, and who does what. We've already agreed your trained monkey should be doing the stuff no one wants to do, like sewage system maintenance.
His name is Hermes, and he's an unusually gifted orangutan, not a monkey,
Jasper corrected. We had agreed to only reveal that I had been specially bred so I could be easily trained to perform specific tasks. We didn't want anyone to know I had been genetically uplifted and was probably smarter than an average human, and certainly not that I had conceived and planned our appropriation of the new habitat platform. Jasper had taken credit for that.
We said we'd all decide on those things, Jasper scolded, staring at each member of Brody's little cadre, daring them to contradict her.
The group had coalesced around Brody before we arrived in New Cascadia. They had been among the first mainland refugees granted permits to work on the new platform and saw themselves as above everyone else, frequently bullying their way into the easiest jobs.
We agreed what was going on in New Cascadia didn't work for us, Brody corrected. Liberty for everyone, Yeah, sure, as long as you can afford to pay for it. We're not gonna do that here.
His pals muttered their agreement.
We're not gonna create some airy-fairy, idealistic way to run things that doesn't work once the tires hit the road. I know what has to be done. Do you?
He challenged.
Everyone needs to have a say in this, Jasper pointed out. That's what we agreed to.
Including the ape?
Brody laughed, then turned and walked away. Jasper was about to respond when I pinched her arm.
Ouch, that hurt, she scolded.
I didn't want you saying something you'd regret later,
I whispered once his group was out of earshot.
We didn't have a choice of who came with us. If we excluded someone, they would have ratted us out, and we would have ended up in a leaky rubber raft.
You're right, Hermes. It's just...
She sighed and ran a hand through her hair.
It's just that the guy reminds me of too many people I knew at the lab, arrogant and full of themselves.
What we don't want is a repeat of New Cascadia,
Evander, one of the electricians, said a day later at our first meeting since stealing the ocean drift. We had agreed to meet in the habitat's atrium the day after our hasty departure to figure out what we were going to do.
We got lured out here with the promise of freedom and shelter from unfair laws, Evander continued, only to discover that just even working for the place forfeits our citizenship to all the older nation states, so we can't even go back. And sure, we could buy our way in, but given the price and what we were being paid, that was a joke.
There were murmurs of agreement.
We can't just float around here forever,
a woman at the back of the group yelled, several people agreeing with her.
Up to this moment, we've only been focused on leaving, Jasper pointed out, trying to calm everyone's fears. Now, we have the opportunity to create something new, something that will work for everyone, where we all can belong and have a voice in how things are run.
Like New Cascadia?
Someone yelled sarcastically. There was a disturbance at the back as Brody suddenly pushed his way to the center of the group.
And we all know how that experiment in alternative governance worked out, he declared. If we do things the way Jasper wants, we'd just end up wasting all our time arguing and getting nowhere. We need to be decisive if we are going to survive out here. What we need is a vision for our future, and vision comes from strong leadership, and strong leadership comes from a strong leader.
He's right. We need to follow the tried and true way,
one of Brody's pals standing at the edge of the group yelled.
We can't afford to drift around the Pacific trying to figure out how to organize ourselves. New Cascadia is probably already contracting some privateer to come after us. We need a realistic plan.
You shouldn't let fear drive you, Jasper countered. We need to do this right. We can head for Micronesia. Parts of it are still above water, and the government there is open to autonomous seasteads. We can set up there, then take our time to figure things out. Hold up a hand if you agree.
Brody glared at the crowd. At first, no one moved. After a tense minute, a few started to hold up their hands. Then, more followed, until a little over half had their arm up.
It looks like more people agree with me, Jasper said, smiling. We'll get underway, then start holding planning meetings to figure the rest out.
Brody growled something to the people closest to him. Then he and his followers quickly left. I looked around to make sure no one was listening, then whispered to Jasper.
Volunteer me to do the sanitation system maintenance.
That's not fair to you. Everyone should share in the dirty work, she whispered back.
I nodded at Brody and his gang as they walked away.
They're not happy, and they are not going to let this go. I want to keep an eye on them. Doing maintenance will give me a reason to be in odd places. No one will pay attention to me. I'll be the trained monkey following directions.
I could tell from Jasper's expression that she didn't like the idea. She had a hard time seeing me the way the rest of the world did. She wanted the world to know who I really was, but that was impossible. If they knew, they would see me as an abomination that should have never been created. Even out here, in international waters, with all the experimentation in alternative social organization, the usual set of human personality types and fears still prevailed. I had been exposed to them through the bars of my cage back at the lab where I had been created, so I had no illusions about how I would be received. Jasper had high hopes for New Cascadia, and now optimism for the inadvertent social experiment we now found ourselves in.
"We're glad to hear that you'll support us. It's really the only way forward. We'll take the platform to Manila and sell it to the Flood Mitigation Authority there in exchange for legitimate passports," Loris, one of Brody's trusted inner circle, was saying to a small group gathered in a common area. Hanging outside on a swing stage, I was pretending to clear leftover construction debris from a drain pipe. I could hear the muffled conversation through the glass. Brody and Loris had been organizing small meetings like this one for the last week, all over the platform. Each time, they enticed people with the prospect of getting a legitimate passport that would give them legal status in a Southeast Asian country.
"We need guarantees that we won't get the short end of the stick," a young woman pointed out.
"Everyone who agrees to this will get a passport, that's the deal," Loris assured her. "Brody has a connection in the Mitigation Authority, and he's already been talking to them. They want the platform, and they've agreed to the deal. They'll send a courier out to us with the passports before we reach Manila. If they renege, we simply keep going to the next flooded coastal city."
"So is everyone on board?"
another person questioned.
"Everyone except a handful who believe they can use the platform as the seed for some kind of floating egalitarian nirvana. But they're easily dealt with. We're going to give them one of the life rafts to build their new society on," Loris laughed.
"No, seriously. When we get closer to land, we'll give them the choice to join us or get off." Trying to hear better, I leaned over a little too far, and the swing stage hit the window. The conversation inside immediately stopped, and seven pairs of eyes glared out at me.
"It's Jasper's ape again," Loris growled and rushed over to bang on the glass.
I scrambled to get the swing stage away from the window. However, there was a sudden jerk on the rope as it was violently pulled up. I had no choice other than to hang on and let myself be pulled up. Two men from the meeting manhandled me onto the roof and held me down. Loris, still panting from running up the stairs, loomed over me.
"Ew. You're spying on us, aren't you?"
I shook my head.
"Ah, so you understood what I said. I bet you understand more than you let on. How much do you know?"
Tilting my head to make it appear that I was struggling to comprehend, I stuttered out.
Hermes help clean."
Loris gave a sinister smile to his two accomplices. "Throw it off the roof," he directed.
Wait, I blurted out. "I was just cleaning. I couldn't hear anything through the glass. Really, I'm not spying on anyone."
The men holding me jumped back in surprise, giving me the moment I needed to break free and run for the stairs.
"Let him go," Loris said. "We can deal with it later. Hiding an illegal, genetically altered ape just adds more reason to cut Jasper and her supporters adrift."
Luck seemed to be with us for once, as clouds rolled in to cover the moon and stars, making the night so dark it was hard to see the silhouette of the habitat's superstructure against the sky. After escaping from Loris, I had told Jasper about their plan, and in turn, she had surreptitiously contacted our small group, which was now gathered near the edge of the platform, behind an empty container left over from the construction. A few meters away, a ladder led down to a floating boom, which served as a temporary dock.
We waited in silence until we could hear the thrum of the tug's diesel engine as its autopilot struggled against the swells to position the big machine beside the boom. Half an hour earlier, I helped Jasper break into the operations room so she could program the tug to come pick us up, then left her there to track its progress and went to gather our friends. Jasper had told them about me, so they weren't entirely shocked when I came to collect them, but now, knowing what I was, I could sense their discomfort. Regardless, all of us, except Jasper, were now hiding while we waited for the docking to complete. I heard a bump and the tug's diesels revved up to hold it against the boom.
"That's it. Go,"
I whispered. Then, the first of our small group began to grope their way down the ladder. I chanced an anxious look back toward the central tower. Jasper should have been moving across the open deck by now. She had just needed to feed a few final instructions into the remote control system, then set a timer which would switch the tug to independent navigation once it had finished docking.
"We're all on board,"
someone yelled up.
"Jasper's not here," I called back. "I'm going to look for her. Tie the tug up to the boom and cut the engine, in case Brody's people come by."
I waited until I heard the engine die, then listened. Waves broke against the tug, pushing it into the boom, creating a kind of muffled squelching sound as rubber rubbed against metal. It was better than the rumble of an idling diesel engine, but anyone who had spent time near a port would recognize that sound and know something had been docked to the boom. I hoped our luck would hold out a bit longer and quietly slip back across the open deck of the platform to find Jasper. The control center was located in a small, two-story structure on the far side of the concrete island. Aside from three people posted for night watch, everyone else was supposed to be asleep in the habitat, but when I got there, the lights in the control room were on and I could hear voices.
"We found her in here with the lights off," someone was saying. "She won't tell us what she was doing."
"I couldn't sleep," Jasper explained. "I like to come here and look out at the ocean when I get insomnia."
"Really?"
Brody challenged, obviously not believing her.
"You know, you get a better view if you go out on the observation deck."
I heard the whine of an electric motor and the sound of the ocean grow louder.
"If we get someone in here to check the controls, what are they going to find? Loris, go wake Aspen,"
Brody directed. I waited until Loris left, then crept to the open door and peeked in. The sliding glass panels which closed off the observation deck from the control room had been opened, letting the salty night air blow in. Brody was edging Jasper toward the opening. Another man, I didn't know well, was looking at the console controlling the tug, trying to decipher the various windows Jasper had opened to hide what she had been doing. Brody glanced at him impatiently.
"I can't tell if anything's been changed," the man admitted reluctantly. "I've never used this system before. We need to wait until Aspen gets here." "What were you doing? Logan caught you sitting there doing something," Brody demanded.
"I just wanted to check the weather forecast," Jasper claimed.
Brody had managed to back her out onto the observation deck, and I knew what he was about to do. He would say it was an accident. I grabbed onto a conduit, suspended from the ceiling, and swung through the door, aiming for the computer console. Taken by surprise, the man who had been trying to decipher the display only had time to protect his face. I crashed into the screen, shattering it, sending a shower of glass and plastic shards everywhere. They wouldn't be using it to take back control of the tug. Brody spun around.
"You!"
he yelled and leapt across the room at me. Springing off the smashed console, I tucked into a ball and hurled myself at Brody, hitting him in the upper chest and knocking him off his feet. Before he could recover, I grabbed Jasper by an arm and dragged her out the door, slamming it behind us. Once outside in the hall, we were greeted by the sound of hurried footsteps.
"This way," I urged, pulling Jasper in the opposite direction.
We burst out of a fire exit on the far side of the building, setting off alarms, taking away any hope of sneaking away into the dark. Lights started coming on in the habitat as we raced around the building and headed back across the open platform to the ladder. We had only made it halfway across when the floodlights turned on.
"There they are!"
someone yelled. The entrance to the control center burst open. Brody and three others raced out, angling to cut us off before we could get to the ladder. Another group, which must have come out of the habitat building before we had set off the alarm, were already at the ladder pointing at the tug. We heard the tug's diesel suddenly fire up. I hoped they'd already cast off the lines and were pulling away. Trying to anticipate the direction they'd take, I motioned Jasper to the left and we raced to the edge of the platform. Brody's group swerved to follow, but were now too far behind to catch us before we got there.
"What now?" Jasper gasped, looking over the edge into the dark water.
"We jump," I explained.
"You can't swim," she began to object.
"But you can," I replied, waiting until I could hear the tug coming around the side of the platform.
By then, Brody was only a few steps away.
"Now!"
I yelled. And then we were weightless for a second, suspended between our dashed hopes and a desperate act. The surface was harder than I expected, hitting me like a hammer blow, knocking the wind out of my lungs. I could see lights searching the murky water as I sank below the surface.
"He's okay," Jasper exclaimed in relief.
I vomited up water as I choked back to consciousness. Several concerned faces were looking down at me. In the distance, I could just make out the shadowy mass of the platform growing smaller by the second.
"We made it," I coughed out.
Jasper helped me sit up.
"What now?"
she asked. I didn't have an answer, but I could see a couple members of our group hanging back, glaring at me, and instantly knew what they were thinking.
"It won't make any difference where we go," I said.
We'd like to thank Steve for his support. Please consider heading over to Patreon and becoming a friend or a supporter of the podcast. The link is in the show notes.
Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. To get other great APN podcasts, head over to albertapodcastnetwork.com, where you'll find Modern Manhood. Join host Herman Villegas as he interviews guests who offer various perspectives on masculinity. This episode of Makeshift Stories is brought to you by Alberta Blue Cross. Alberta Blue Cross understands that running a small business is tough, and they understand that business owners in Alberta are busy. Let Alberta Blue Cross give you peace of mind with a group benefit plan. They offer health, dental, life, and disability coverage for your employees. Alberta Blue Cross group benefit plans are easy to manage, anywhere, anytime, and on any device, making it easy for you and your employees to access. To learn more and explore your options, head to ab.bluecross.ca. This episode of Makeshift Stories is also brought to you by Connect First Credit Union.
Welcome to Super Typical Mega Bank. How can we disappoint you today?
Hi, I'd like to open an account.
May I pressure you into considering a pro disadvantage, high regret, impersonal, everyday inconvenient savings plan with added compounded confusion at no additional discount or apology? It's one of our top disappointers.
I feel so...
disappointed?
Yeah.
Another unsatisfied customer. Next!
If your bank makes you feel like this, it's time you talk to us. Connect First Credit Union. Bank on a brighter future.
Makeshift Stories is released around the beginning and middle of the month. This month's story was written by Alan V. Hare and read by Mitchell Tu. Opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by Matthew Erdman. Audio production and editing by Makeshift Studios. If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. Links to both are in the show notes. You can help us out by getting your friends to subscribe or follow wherever they listen to audio. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution No Derivative License, which means you are free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.